Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting to you on the 24th of May, 2014. It's great to have your company today. My name's Hereward Fenton. And for the next hour, we'll be going through some news, both local and overseas news. And we will be attempting to penetrate into a deeper level of understanding what is going on than what you're going to get from the carefully controlled and choreographed news organisations who are really nothing more than arms of mega corporations, which themselves are the crypto oligarchy of the world, or they would like to believe the world. In fact, it is really one element of our planet, comprising most of Western Europe, North America, and Australasia, and a few other countries dotted around the world that are under their grip, and of course many other countries that are dependent on their foreign aid, therefore required to toe the line. And of course this is all backed up by massive military force in the form of 12 aircraft carriers and enough nuclear weapons to destroy the planet several times over, possessed by the United States, to enforce their view, to enforce their picture of reality. They have this massive military force. And of course, it is an empire, and the empire controls every aspect of its presence. Big part of that is controlling the way people perceive the empire. That's why the media is such an incredibly important part of the infrastructure of the empire. The media is central to the way the empire functions. And programs such as the one you're listening to right now are a thorn in the side of the empire, because we attempt to burst the bubble. We will reveal the truths that lie behind the glossy pictures that they provide to you. So in today's show, I'm going to be, first of all, taking a look at the situation in Thailand. There's been a coup, and there is certainly a lot of very scary news coming from our Western news agencies about the implications of that for democracy and freedom in Thailand. I'm going to be bringing you another perspective on that, which is certainly a little different to what you've been told. We'll be having a look at some recent Australian news, the scandal over Tony Abbott's daughter, who was a recipient of a scholarship, and this is certainly being used as part of the campaign against Tony Abbott now. I'll be having a look at that and what the real substance of that is, and whether we should really be concerned about that or not. I'll be taking a look at some of the sex crimes news and trials that have been very big in the media, both in Australia and the UK, with the trial of Robert Hughes and Rolf Harris. I want to raise the concern on this show that what we're seeing is the media, in the form of tabloid-style television shows, A Current Affair in particular, taking the role of the judiciary. I mean, these cases have been launched by television news. It's quite a bizarre situation, and it seems like our whole justice system is now being completely undermined by the way in which the media takes over public perception and basically says, well, you know, this person's evil, and then does a huge story on it. We'll also be having a look at a new book for children about 9/11. It's very interesting. It's a book that is written for children, but it is about the destruction of the Twin Towers in 9/11. A very interesting little production indeed. And we'll also be having a look at some vaccine news. A new study from the University of Sydney rules out a link between vaccination and autism. And this is a very clearly propagandistic piece from news.com.au, but the whole study appears to have been written in a way that is just begging its own question. It is designed to shut down discussion. So we'll be having a look at that. So do stay with us. Oh, I'll also be taking a look at the Bentley blockade. Very interesting developments there. And I actually have a report from one of our Confederates in Queensland, Marcus Forrest, who did an interview with some of the protesters at the Bentley blockade against coal seam gas. So all that and more coming up. Do stay with us. Okay, let's take a look at the situation in Thailand. On the 22nd of May, a coup was announced. The Thai military took over the reins of government. This is after having declared martial law a couple of days before. Now, of course, this is being portrayed in the Western media and very much so in the Australian media as a completely anti-democratic scenario. It's being portrayed as something very, very bad. International human rights organizations like Human Rights Watch have condemned what is taking place in Thailand. And one would assume from these reports that this is purely a power grab on the part of a military junta. But of course, this is very far from the truth. The real situation in Thailand is that there has been a massive popular movement against an incumbent government which has shown itself to be deeply corrupt, deeply hijacked by Western globalist influences, and which has used tactics in order to win elections which are totally undemocratic, in the sense that they've used power and influence and money to buy votes. The government in Thailand is closely connected to the exiled former leader, Thaksin Shinawat, who, of course, is a billionaire. And he has been able to engineer the winning of elections for the past decade by very, very crude populist tactics, which basically involve handing out lots of money to the rural poor. And this constitutes a large sector of the Thai population. But at the same time, he's actually increased taxes on the middle classes. He's actually increased taxes on businesses in the cities. And he's also created a situation where the foreign influences have a lot more traction in Thailand, where the sovereignty of Thailand is being eroded. And the protest movement that has been huge against Thaksin Shinawat in Thailand over the last year or so sprang up as a result of an attempt by the current government, led by his sister, led by Yingluck Shinawatra, the sister of exiled Thaksin Shinawatra, an attempt to pass through Parliament an amnesty law which would basically have allowed the former leader to return to Thailand and other people associated with his government to escape prosecution. And this is what sparked the latest round of protests. And they were huge. The whole of Bangkok was basically log-jammed with the protests, which occupied major squares in the city, major intersections all over Bangkok, and moved to different locations. Finally, the government was, the leader was actually forced to resign as a result of a court case, and this was to do with her own policies, and particularly in relation to the rice subsidy scheme, which turned out to be a total disaster. The rice subsidy scheme involved handing out money to farmers over and above the market price of rice, and then the government failed to deliver on its promise and caused great hardship among those farmers. The leader was forced to stand down, but the government was still in power. Now, the protesters had moved at that point to a location in the old city, and they were under constant threat. There had been numerous attacks against the protesters. There had been grenade attacks. There had been gun attacks. There had been shootings. About 28 people in all had been killed. And the government had done very little to pursue those responsible. And it seemed that these attacks were getting more brazen, and a large cache of weapons was discovered about a week ago, which suggested that these insurgents, who most people believe are connected to the red shirts, were planning some major attack. And this is when the army stepped in and declared martial law. And what's incredible in all this is how long it took, and how incredibly tolerant the powers that be were for such a very long time. And we have to understand in Thailand that the army holds power over and above elected governments, and this goes back deep into the roots of the Thai society, is that the army is very closely allied to the king and forms a kind of a second layer of power in Thai society. A lot of people see that as a negative thing. They see that as problematic. They see that as anti-democratic. But in practice, most Thai people see it as a kind of a safeguard, kind of a protection against tyranny where it may spring up from a government. And this is the way most people in Thailand actually view the current situation. They view the army as having sprung into action to protect basic law and order, to protect the people. But unfortunately, these realities are not being reflected in the mainstream news coverage of what is going on in Thailand. So we're just going to break, and I'll be bringing you more on this story when we return. Don't go away.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. We're just taking a look at the situation in Thailand at the moment, and with a particular focus on the way in which the Western media is putting a particular slant on everything that's occurring there. I have an article here from ABC News, that's Australian ABC News, which says that the ex-Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra and his sister Yingluck are going to establish a government in exile. Now, their lawyer is quoted here as saying that another host state is going to provide a haven for these exiled leaders to establish their government in exile. And the Red Shirts have said that there are a number of nations which are willing to offer such a safe place. And it says here in the article that protests continue in defiance of the martial law imposed last week. Now, it says here that Ms. Yingluck is among more than 100 politicians being held at an army base in Bangkok, and Thailand's military chief said reforms were needed before an election could be held. The army chief launched his coup after rival factions refused to give ground in a struggle for power between royalist establishment and the populist government that had raised fears of serious violence and damaged the economy. Now, the overall impressions given from this article here are that the government is a popular government, that the protesters belong to the establishment, that they are elitists, and that the establishment has now taken over to suppress the popular populist government. And this is the view that's being echoed on all the major Western media cartels. Very little attention is being given to the actual substantive reasons why, in fact, this crisis developed. If you'd like to get a better insight into what is going on in Thailand, I can recommend a blog, altthainews.blogspot.com, which is authored by Tony Cartolucci. And this blog offers regular articles and goes into quite a lot of depth and has a lot of insight as to what is really going on in Thailand. And I'll just read to you from a recent article dated 23rd of May. Thailand coup ousts US-backed dictator. Life goes on as normal in Thailand's capital of Bangkok, the day after the Royal Thai Army declared it was taking power from the diminished, ineffectual caretaker government. Businesses and offices were open as usual, with no discernible difference for Thais. The coup was carried out at the climax of half a year of massive and protracted street demonstrations against the proxy regime of billionaire Thaksin Shinawatra. Shinawatra was himself ousted in a coup in 2006 and has since fled the country, residing primarily in Dubai. With his formidable political machine left intact, he has been able to rule the country remotely through a series of nepotist-appointed proxies, including his brother-in-law, Somchai Wongsawat, and his own sister, Yingluck Shinawatra. While the Western media continues portraying Shinawatra's various proxy regimes as democratically elected governments, they are nothing of the sort. Shinawatra, a convicted criminal, neither on the ballot or even in the country, but admittedly running his political party and those standing for him as Prime Minister, is unelected and therefore a dictator. Shinawatra's ability to continue running the country remotely and even contest elections despite being a convicted criminal evading a 2-year jail sentence, multiple arrest warrants, and a growing list of pending court cases is due not only to his impunity within Thailand, but impunity he has enjoyed as a result of significant and continuous support from Wall Street, London, and Brussels. Indeed, for over a decade, Thaksin Shinawatra has attempted to transform Thailand into a Western client state. An enumerated list of Shinawatra's sovereignty-usurping concessions and crimes against the Thai people make it clear as to why the military, along with Thailand's other indigenous and independent institutions, have been working systematically to diminish and uproot his political influence over Thailand. In the late 1990s, Thaksin was an advisor to notorious private equity firm The Carlyle Group. He pledged to his foreign contacts that upon taking office, he would serve as a matchmaker between the US equity fund and Thai businesses. It would represent the first of many compromising conflicts of interest that would undermine Thailand's sovereignty under his rule. Thaksin was Thailand's prime minister from 2001 to 2006. He has since dominated the various reincarnations of his political party and still to this day runs the country by proxy via his nepotist-appointed sister, Yingluck Shinawatra. In 2001, he privatised Thailand's resources and infrastructure, including the nation's oil conglomerate, PTT, much to Wall Street's delight. In 2003, he would commit Thai troops to the US invasion of Iraq, despite widespread protests from both the Thai military and the public. Thaksin would also allow the CIA to use Thailand for its abhorrent rendition program. Also, in 2003, he initiated what he called a war on drugs. Nearly 3,000 people were extrajudicially murdered in the streets over the course of just 90 days. It would later turn out that more than half of those killed had nothing to do even with the drug trade. In this act alone, Thaksin earned himself the title as the worst human rights offender in Thai history, and he was still far from finished. In 2004, he oversaw the killing of 85 protesters in a single day during his mishandled, heavy-handed policy in the country's troubled Deep South. This atrocity is referred to as the Thak Bai incident. And this, I believe, is an incident where these protesters were locked in a truck and basically suffocated. An incredible atrocity, an absolutely despicable, evil act. These were Muslim protesters. And of course, there is a problem in the south of Thailand. There are Muslim insurgencies there, but the response of the government at that time was to inflame the situation. And that massacre, goes down in history as quite something quite astonishing. Anyway, continuing here from the article. Also in 2004, Thaksin attempted to ramrod through a US-Thailand free trade agreement without parliamentary approval, backed by the US-ASEAN Business Council. Throughout his administration, he was notorious for intimidating the press and crushing dissent. According to Amnesty International, 18 human rights defenders were either assassinated or disappeared during his first term in office. Among them was human rights activist and lawyer Somchai Nilapaijit. He was last seen in 2004, being arrested by police and never seen again. And this is very important to emphasise that the style of the Shinawatra government has been one that uses violence. It has been one that has the style of fascism in the sense that it uses underhanded techniques. It's quite willing to threaten, it's quite willing to actually use violent force, as we've seen used against the protesters, in order to achieve its means. But then it falls back on the false claims of democracy and a populist movement to try and bolster support from overseas and to play up to the Western media portrayals. Anyway, I do recommend taking a look more at altthainews.blogspot.com. We'll have the links there on the site. Do not accept Western media portrayal of what's going on in Thailand. I'm going to break. We'll be back with some Australian news. Thank you. Truth News Radio Australia. Do check us out on the internet at www.truthnews.com.au, and you can see we've done quite a lot of interviews over the past year and years before, but we're really gearing up now, and we've got some great guests who've come on, and we're going to be having more great guests come on in the coming months and years. And in fact, next week I have one of my great heroes coming on the show. His name is Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And he'll be talking about all the latest developments in his campaign and, of course, the opening of the 9/11 Museum, which has caused some controversy in New York. So I'm really looking forward to that interview coming up 1 week from today with Richard Gage, AIA. So let's return to some Australian news now. There's an unfolding scandal over the Prime Minister Tony Abbott's daughter. It turns out that Frances Abbott was awarded a $60,000 scholarship from a design college. And it turns out that this design college doesn't typically award scholarships. And it also turns out that the chairman of the college is a personal friend of the Prime Minister and was also a donor to the Liberal Party. Now, as I've mentioned in previous shows, there is a concerted effort to destroy Tony Abbott. And I think there are a variety of reasons for that. I think one of the main reasons that the establishment wants to get rid of Tony Abbott is they want to push, they want to keep the carbon tax. They want to quash the repeal of the carbon tax. And Tony Abbott and those who are allied with him are a big blocker to that. I think that we're going to see mounting pressure to have Tony Abbott dumped. But probably the way this is going to unfold is that the Liberal Party will stay in power. They'll possibly go two or three terms. But they'll have a leadership swap, just like we saw with the Labor Party, and they'll get a leader who is more amenable to the agenda of the power elite. This is the way the new democracy works, you see. When political parties don't do what you want, you just engineer a scandal, you engineer an internal friction, you create a leadership struggle, and then, oh, what do you know? You get a new leader who does what you want. This is why we consider the democracies of countries like Australia to be a bit laughable. Nonetheless, some of these scandals are real, and in this case, I do believe that that he is in a bit of trouble here, because $60,000 is a significant amount of money, and if he did have a personal relationship with the chairman of the college, it certainly looks bad. Just reading from The Guardian here. This has largely been reported by an Australian alternative news site called New Matilda. But I'm reading here an article from The Guardian. Tony Abbott's daughter was given a scholarship for a $60,000 design degree. Frances Abbott was courted for the scholarship, says New Matilda. Tony Abbott's daughter received a chairman's scholarship for a degree costing more than $60,000 from the White House Institute of Design, where an Abbott donor sits as chairman on the Board of Governors. The revelation raises questions for the Prime Minister over whether the scholarship should have been declared on his interests register. The coalition government is also under pressure over changes to higher education funding announced in the budget. Frances Abbott undertook a Bachelor of Design at the White House Institute of Design from 2011 to 2013. And I have another article here. Tony Abbott's daughter was courted for the scholarship, where it says, and again, this has been reported initially by newmatilda.com. The White House Institute of Design courted the Prime Minister's daughter a number of times and gave her a scholarship during her first and only interview, raising more questions over whether the $60,000 scholarship would or should have been declared on Tony Abbott's interest register. New Matilda has reported leaked documents which show the precise amount of $60,636. Taylor was tasked with courting Francis away from other institutions with the lure of a scholarship. That's the Institute's governor, Les Taylor. Okay, so it looks as if there has been some improper activity here, which is going to get the Prime Minister into some very hot water indeed. So I think it's overblown. I'm not saying I think it's right. It does seem a little dodgy to me, to be honest. But a scholarship is a scholarship. And normally scholarships are exempt from such declarations. They're not considered gifts. And that would normally be as far as it would go. But because there is this massive interest in trying to bring down Tony Abbott, they are going to find anything they can. And here, because of the prior relationship of Tony Abbott with the chairman, I think this is going to bring him into ongoing difficulties. Okay, I just want to turn now to a completely different subject, that being the trial of the Australian iconic entertainer Rolf Harris for sexual crimes, for indecent assault. There has been huge exposure on the media of this trial and very lurid details of Rolf Harris's apparent behaviour have been blazoned forth upon our media and tabloids. And I just want to give you an overview of some concerns I have about the way this case and the case against another iconic Australian actor, Robert Hughes, have been conducted. Now, of course, in the one case, this is occurring in the UK. Rolf Harris is on trial in the UK. Robert Hughes, the former star of Hey Dad, was on trial and is now convicted in Sydney. What I would like to emphasise, what I would like to draw your attention to, is that both of these men were subjected to a television campaign against them before there were actual criminal proceedings. The claims made on television were then used as the basis of testimony in the courts. And this is really, really wrong. And this is so against the basic principles of justice, because of course television goes out to millions of people. Television influences public opinion in a huge way. When you put someone on trial on television and without any of the due process and safeguards that a proper legal trial will have, you completely destroy the potential of a fair trial for that individual. You sway public opinion against that individual. And of course, when it's done with the power and technique and editorial technologies of modern television, it can be very, very convincing. They can create a scenario whereby you will believe in pretty much anything they say. I mean, they spend a lot of money on doing that. It's their expertise. It's what they're good at. Essentially, it's propaganda. Why is it being used in these cases where men are being charged with indecent assault? I'll be looking at that a little more when we come back from the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away. I'm talking a little about the trial of Rolf Harris. Now, let me emphasise, I do not say that he's innocent, but I do believe in the principle of the presumption of innocence. In other words, a person must be granted a fair trial. A person must be presumed innocent until proven guilty. It seems to me that Rolf Harris has been already convicted in the public opinion and really has no chance now. No chance. And this is compounded by what I see as completely corrupt dealings of the system, completely corrupt dealings of the police and the media, which are going to pervert the course of justice. I've got an article here from 3news.co.nz. And the title of that article is Rolf Harris Witness Admits Lying. An Australian woman who alleges Rolf Harris groped her when she was 15 has admitted in court she lied to a British detective about selling her story to the media during her first formal police interview. Tonya Lee was grilled by Harris's defence lawyer over her decision to speak with Woman's Day and A Current Affair in mid-2013. The New South Wales woman, 43, admitted lying about the deal, but said it was organised by her dominating ex-boyfriend. The money is a huge regret, a huge mistake. Ms. Lee is one of four main complainants in Harris's child sex trial. She said the entertainer indecently assaulted her when she travelled to London in 1986. Some 30 years later, she contacted Sydney's Daily Telegraph in May 2013 after reading that British detectives were in the city to investigate Harris. So what actually happened here was there were already some proceedings against Rolf Harris, but certainly not enough to warrant a trial. There probably wasn't enough for prosecution. Then people have come forward and said, oh, look, this happened to me. But they went straight to the media with it. And the lady concerned here actually ended up going on A Current Affair and Woman's Day in the same week that she was being interviewed by police. Now, with the further revelations that occurred with these programs, the case against Rolf Harris got stronger, and of course he is now on trial, and the claims against him are very, very serious at face value, although they don't actually involve sexual penetration. That they are not rape claims, they are indecent assault claims, but a lot of them are pretty lurid, and certainly they do cross the line into what is considered criminality. Now, I have also had a chance to look at the proceedings against Robert Hughes, and that is an even more egregious example of how the media actually led the case against this man. It actually all started with a program on A Current Affair, and then the police got involved later. In fact, it started with an article in Vogue magazine, which was then picked up on by A Current Affair. And in the original articles, the person concerned was not even named. It was just an anonymous claim made by one of the stars of the show, the child star of the show, that a certain anonymous individual had sexually abused her. then as a result of the television programs, as a result of the exposure, the person was ultimately named, and it turned out that it was the actual star of the show. Now, he was convicted, Robert Hughes was convicted, and again, not for rape. These are not strictly sexual acts, although they are forms of what they call indecent assault. They're basically gropings and pressing of one's groin against another person, this type of thing. Nonetheless, you know, they are against the law, and because they were perpetrated against children. But what bothers me, folks, is the way in which the media is basically running the show. Remember, the media can paint any picture they like. The media can create alternate realities. Maybe in this case, these men are both guilty. Maybe. Does that mean it's okay to have the media leading public opinion, to have the media predetermining the outcome of a trial? Absolutely not. You've got to understand this is a corruption. This is an undermining of the principle of justice. Later on down the track, it might be someone who's completely innocent, which is framed up. This is it's a precedent for using the media to surpass, to bypass, to replace the system of justice, of a trial, of the courts, of a jury. And there is no discussion about this. There is no outcry about it. There are no complaints about it. It's a very serious situation, folks. What's evolving in Australia? What's evolving in the UK? The type of society we are evolving into. And the real effects of that you're not seeing right now. The real effects of that you're going to see in another 10, 20, 30 years. The erosion of democracy is occurring right before your eyes. And no one's saying a word. It's all just happening. Well, that's about as much as I have to say on this topic. Again, I can't say whether these men are guilty or innocent. It certainly looks like they're guilty from everything I've seen. But remember, the witnesses who've come forward were paid large sums of money. It says here in the article that I'm reading right now, Ms. Lee, the one who is one of the chief complainants in the case against Rolf Harris, was offered $60,000 for her testimony. How can you get honest testimony from people who have been offered $60,000 to say certain things that can never be proved or disproven because it's all based on their memory of something that happened decades ago? It can never be proven or disproven 100%. There are no other witnesses, only the one witness, and that witness was paid $60,000. I mean, why isn't this thrown out of court? And I'm not saying I want a pedophile to go free. Absolutely not. But if a conviction is fraudulent, if someone is falsely tried, then it has to be thrown out of court. You have to preserve the integrity of the justice system, even if that means letting perpetrators go free. It's more important because the crimes of state that can be perpetrated against innocent people are far, far worse and far greater, on a far greater scale than the one or two people who might escape justice. So I hope those listening understand the principle that I'm advocating here. I'm saying you have to protect the system at all costs, even if that means letting a bad guy go every now and then, because the system screwed up, because the system didn't follow its proper procedures. That means if you screw up, yes, bad guys will get to go free. That means don't screw up. That means follow the correct procedures. Don't bypass the law. Don't smear people in advance. Don't undermine the presumption of innocence. This is what should be used in the defence of these men. But again, it hasn't. I think the defence of these men has been very soft, has been very backpedalling, and I don't know why, and it really worries me. Anyway, one more topic to talk about today, and that is back on my old favourite subject of vaccines. Actually, I have two stories I want to cover with you briefly on the subject of vaccines. The first one is a study which has come out of the University of Sydney. And I've got an article here from news.com.au titled "University of Sydney Study Rules Out Link Between Vaccination and Autism." Whether or not to vaccinate children has sparked fiery debate among parents for decades. Many parents feel immunisation is unnatural, and there are prevalent fears about a link between vaccination and autism. But a new report led by the University of Sydney appears to have settled the argument. A review of available data from around the world has found that there is no link between vaccination and the development of autism or autism spectrum disorders. The study examined seven sets of data involving more than 1.25 million children and concluded that there was no evidence to support a relationship between common vaccines for measles, mumps, rubella, diphtheria, tetanus, and whooping cough and the development of autism. The paper's senior author, Associate Professor Guy Eslick from the Sydney Medical School, said he was inspired to look into the issue after watching some documentaries on the medical debate. Now, I've had a quick look at the abstract of this article, and I haven't actually had a chance to read the article because it's not available for free. But one thing to point out is that this was really just a review of older studies. There was no original research done in this, and there was no research done into unvaccinated kids. It was all just a rehashing of the existing information. The article is presented in a way as if to say it conclusively proves such and such, whereas in fact all it does is repeats the information that already existed. And there has never been a study that compares vaccinated to unvaccinated kids, partly because it's very hard to find in the general community unvaccinated kids. It could be done, it's just that they haven't put the effort into it because they don't want to. You need to do a study of vaccinated versus unvaccinated. Now, we have run out of time, unfortunately. I wanted to read to you the story about how the measles vaccine apparently cured a woman of cancer. We'll have to do that in a future show. Hour two of today's show will be a repeat broadcast of an interview. Next week, we'll be back with a full two-hour show. I do look forward to speaking to you then. You've been listening to Truth News Radio Australia. And, as always, it's a pleasure talking to you. We'll be back next week.